What are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This podcast is brought to you by our patrons at patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. Welcome to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the amazing universe of the Elder Scrolls. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is your host, Tom, or Robots. I'm here with my good buddy, the Lotus of the Doom. Lotus, hello. How's it going, man?
It's good. It's good.
We've done
tackling the last region.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. We've gone around the entire continent, all the way back up to Skyrim, and now we're heading south to Cyrodiil. And Cyrodiil is an interesting location. I think everybody was very excited to be talking about Skyrim because the game is so popular. We spent a lot of time in Skyrim, thousands of hours, maybe.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Sounds about right.
And one or two people played it.
One or two, yeah. And, you know, they've re-released it like 17 times at this point.
Sounds about right.
But we're going to Cyrodiil, and Cyrodiil is interesting for a number of reasons. First and foremost, because it shows up as a prominent zone in two of the, well, let's call them modern releases.
I think modern releases is a good way of putting that.
Yeah, Skyrim obviously was it still stands up as a game 11 years later.
Yeah, and it's still the last numbered entry in the series.
Right. But the game before that, Oblivion, right, holds up pretty well, too.
It does. It is a little disturbing to actually read when it came out, because thinking back that it's like, well, I came out in 2006, which is that long ago. And then it's like, oh, wait, yes, it is. It's almost old enough to drink.
Yeah. So, yes, time keeps moving on.
We're getting real close. It's like that game is 17 years old at this point. Yes. However, it's still on a more modern system than games even like prior to that. Morrowind definitely has a more dated feel to it. The Oblivion feels like it's part of the more modern era of games.
Yeah, it's Xbox 360 generation. Yep. Everything was fully three-dimensionally rendered with actual action combat and
voice acting
and scripted moments and dynamic quest lines and all sorts
of really cool stuff.
Radiant AI. Yeah, all of that stuff. So the region that we explore in Oblivion is Cyrodiil. It's based in Cyrodiil, and this happens, of course, in the third era. In ESO, we're in the middle of the second era, and it's a very different location.
It is. And on top of that, it's also a major factor in Elder Scrolls Online as well, because of the Three Banners War conflict that's happening, which basically turns not all of Cyrodiil, but a large portion of Cyrodiil into the PvP zone, essentially. So it's just constantly where thousands of players are just spending all of their time that don't really, you know, that's, if PvP is their main thing, that's where they're living. It's there.
That's their home.
And ironically, there's a major PvP event happening right now, if you're listening to this, like, as the most current episode of this show. Oitzrake's Mayhem is happening, which is, you know, all of Cyrodiil is just flooding with people just murdering each other.
Yeah, plus the Imperial City, and you have the whole zone. And the whole zone is a bit transformed simply because of the war. You have all of these fortresses and locations that you can siege, and those things aren't necessarily there in the time of Oblivion, because it's not a time. I mean, they're at war with the Daedra, who are invading from Oblivion, but it's not a time of the Three Banners War. All of that is long gone ended. In the past. That is yes. ended. So the world is different, but the world is different for a few other reasons too, and we're going to get into that. But before we get into that, and I guess I'll tease it right now. First, the first thing I'm going to tease is, as we get further into this episode, I am going to show you an overlay. I've actually taken both maps and put them into Photoshop, and I can show you an overlay of how they fit together or don't. It's actually very interesting. So if you're listening on the audio version, always remember there's the YouTube version. So if you look up Elder Scrolls Lorecast on YouTube, you can find this episode on YouTube. Look at the overlays that we're doing.
Yeah, there'll be a little more visual to this one. To go along with just us trying to explain it.
Right, right. And then towards the end of the episode, we're going to get into some of the discrepancies about the way Cyrodiil was explained in the lore from long ago and why it doesn't yes. look like that anymore and all of that. So here, let's get into it a little bit. There are different zones, the different areas, part of the geography, and this comes from the UESP. So it says on the UESP, Cyrodiil has varied environment and is divided into several regions. The Nibene Basin, this is a vast region that dominates Cyrodiil, containing all of the areas that drain into the river Niben. The area around the central city and the upper Niben is often known as the Heartlands. East of the river, the region consists of mostly open fields, while to the west and north it is more wooded. The Imperial City covers City Isle in the center of Lake Rumair, the source of the Niben, and the city of Braville?
I always say Braville. I don't actually... I'm not entirely sure that I remember how it's said in game, but I always
think
it's said Braville.
Braville, I think you're right, is located on the banks of the Niben Bay in the Nibene Valley. So that's kind of the heartland of the area. That's the main central area. Then we have the Great Forest, an immense wooded area west of the Imperial City, which we just mentioned. The Kolovian Highlands, which is a hilly forested region of western Cyrodiil with the town of Coral as its main settlement. There's the West Weald, the open countryside of southern Cyrodiil, which is well known for its vineyards. The city of Skingrad is located here. Then there is the Gold Coast, which is a separate zone in ESO. The western coastline of Cyrodiil that is dotted with farms. The main settlements of the region are the port city of Anvil and the city of Kvatch further inland. The Hero of Kvatch! Hero of Kvatch, which is... basically just a husk and a few buildings that are on fire in Oblivion. The Jeral or Ural Mountains starts with a J.
I always said Jeral Mountains, but again,
maybe it's a Y sound. Don't know.
Who knows?
The mountain range in northern Cyrodiil on the Skyrim border containing the town of Bruma. Valis Mountains, which is the mountain range in eastern Cyrodiil on the Morrowind border. Remember, this is the middle of the map. It borders on pretty much every other area.
Yeah, you're going to have a lot of connections to the other regions. This really is the centralized hub of everything, which we'll get into like the Imperial City in a minute. But like, it's the centralized hub with the capital in the center of the centralized hub. Yeah. Like, this is just the center of all things,
essentially.
Actually,
I think we should probably do an entire episode about the capital city and
just
all the
actual
different
Imperial
sections.
City, right? So, yeah, no, there's a lot to talk about besides us just kind of giving us a quick little overview in this one.
Right. So that's definitely a city that's worth digging into a little bit more. And along with the Valis Mountains, the city of Chadenhall is located on the foothills. And then there's Blackwood, a swampland in southern Cyrodiil, east of Leowyn, along the Black Marsh border. So borders on Black Marsh, on Morrowind, on Skyrim, like all of these different zones. Now, what's so cool about visiting these locations in the game Oblivion is as you get further out from the central part of the game, the more the region starts to feel like the areas it borders on. So as you move north, you get into more snowy mountains. It starts to feel more like Skyrim. And the people who inhabit the cities on those in those areas that are closer to those borders are more a mix of the kinds of people who would have come from the areas on the borders of those maps. So I always thought that was a really cool feature.
Yeah, it is. Cause it's just kind of like, it takes on the traits of where it's connecting to, which is interesting from like, you know, the Alliance perspective in ESO, because it resembles the area that you've been coming from already, because whatever Alliance you pick, you're coming from that region. So it's kind of like this unique little thing that your part of Cyrodiil has your feel to it, which I always thought was very cool.
Yeah, I always liked going south and getting down to Leowyn and meeting all the Argonians and it feeling so swampy. And right, it feels like a little bit of Black Marsh right there.
Right. And Blackwood itself was an entire chapter for the Elder Scrolls Online that fleshed out all of that area that we hadn't seen. We had seen Leowyn, but we hadn't seen a lot of things like Gideon. Mm-hmm. Since Arena. So it was like, oh, we get to see some of these things again as it fleshed it back out. And then you have, you know, the Gold Coast expansion that came out it was years ago at this point, but it, you know, and that fleshed out that side of the area. So it's like, it's such a big region. They've actually had expansions filling out the parts outside the Imperial, like the war itself, into the not war torn as much sections.
Right. So here, let's do this. We're going to pull up the map, and you can see right now on the screen, this is Photoshop with the map from ESO. And then on top of it, I've actually laid in the Oblivion map. And this is really cool. So the first thing I want you to notice is that the Cyrodiil map is shaped like an upside down triangle. And there are a lot of decisions here that were made because of gameplay and the lore around ESO. You have the three different factions vying for control of the Imperial City. So they each in this map have similar amounts of land on their corner of the triangle moving in toward the Imperial City.
Right. So the logistical design of it is to kind of have not identical, but you want an evenly distributed, it's a three-sided fight. So it's one of the three groups.
Right.
And whatever your faction is needs to kind of have a comparable amount of space and things to the others.
Right. So this is the ESO version, and I can kind of scroll out. I can scroll around. I can move around, but I can also, if it will let me, pan out. Why is it? It's not letting me pan. Why are you not letting me pan? Nope, not that button. Oh, there we go. So you can pan in and out. And so now you can see the whole thing. And then if we overlay here, I'll just. You can see that it's like there's a transparency in here where you can actually see both of these sets of locations. Check this out.
I'm gonna kind of see.
This is the Cyrodiil map.
Yeah,
and it's shaped differently. Like the triangle that existed for ESO is just a subset,
right,
of what we see in Oblivion. In fact, the zone stretches way more to the west and then way more south. And if I was to drag this down here, it goes way south all the way down to Topol Bay.
Right. And that's something that I feel is important is ESO clipped that like triangle portion, so to speak, of Cyrodiil so that it could be distributed in a way that it's, you know, even to each of the side, evens in quotes, but like, right, you know, a balance between the three sides for gameplay reasons. However, by doing that, they had to kind of annex off parts of it. They're still on the continent. It's just they're not, they've been actually, this is, you know, I just mentioned Blackwood and the Gold Coast expansions. They're being added in outside the PvP field,
right,
because then it won't affect the balance. But they're still there. However, at first look, they don't quite look the same because you didn't get the whole thing in ESO to start with.
Right. So this is also really interesting. Here, I'm going to pull the map back up. And I've tried my best in order to figure out the scale of these two maps and match up key points. And it's not easy. These are very different maps. And you could say the rivers rerouted a little bit. Maybe the roads from the earlier era weren't there 1,000 years later.
Sure. You can make there's those also kinds of the longstanding thing, which the series is known for, is that since everything is supposedly done from in-game itself or in-world itself, the cartography behind a lot of this stuff is highly suspect.
Right.
And it's kind of become a staple of the series that the maps are similar, not the same.
Right. So check this out here. I'm pulling it back up. This is ESO map. Now we're going to overlay the Oblivion map. And if you look, I'm going to go back and forth between the two. Even the shape of the island in the middle, the Imperial City Island, is different. And on this version, I've layered them together to be roughly the same size. So if the island is roughly the same size, then the other locations should be in similar places. But look down here. I'm going to scroll down. Look down here to the Nibbin Bay. And it is significantly further away in ESO than it is in Oblivion. Also,
the sense of scale gets weird.
Yeah. Also, the water around the island and the river is way thicker in Oblivion than it is in ESO. They probably wanted more land for you to be fighting on top of and not have to worry about crossing a river and making that
so much erosion. Issue.
Right. So much erosion. Now, check this out. This is actually even more interesting to me. If you look at the top left side of the map, we've got Coral, the city of Coral. And on the right side, we've got Chaitanal. And on the bottom, we've got Breville. These are three kind of corners of the map, roughly on a triangle with each other. Skingrad's on the bottom left, but let's not worry about them right now. So if we have those three.
We don't have Skingrad and ESO yet anyways.
Right. So
it's technically out of our area.
Right. So if we zoom in on Breville and we look at where Breville would be located on the ESO map, it's actually a little bit more south.
Yes.
So with the map centered on the Imperial City, Breville is more south. But the same thing happens for the other two cities as well. So Chaitanal is north, is actually northeast of where Chaitanal actually is on the ESO map.
Yep. It just slid out of position.
It just moved a little further away. And then if we go up to the north northwest, we have the same thing happen when we take a look at where Coral is. Coral is way up here, and then it's on the actual map, it's more south and east, or on the ESO map, it's more south and east. On the Oblivion map, it's more north and west. So all of these locations are further from where they actually were if you center the island in a way where the island actually centers and is the same size. Now, if you adjust for this and put the cities closer to where they're supposed to be, the island shrinks.
Right.
And the bay is even further inland, and a bunch of other locations don't work as well either. So there's no, like, I spent a good amount of time trying to line these up in ways that make sense. And like looking at different roads, if I line up certain roads, it looks like some of the roads are remnants of roads that were there in ESO. So if you line some of those up, other things on the map get way off. If you change the scale to match something up on across the map in two places, all of a sudden Imperial City is way too far south. It's like everything keeps on moving around. So
it does.
It's a completely different setup, which is
something
really interesting.
I feel it's probably would be remiss to not mention while we were talking about the cities themselves is Coral, the city of Coral is super exploded in ESO. Like it's got giant fissures down the middle with lava pouring out of them and flame Atronachs just running amok throughout the city because of earthquakes and stuff like that in the area. So it makes it a very dynamic area to be in or whatever, but just it's kind of funny to think, no, granted, so much time passes between ESO and the Second Era and when we go back to this region later on in the Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion, but it's just kind of amusing to think about these giant lava splits that have just torn the city apart. They rebuild the same city and apparently fill in all the lava cracks and all of that and just turn it back into a normal city again. It's like, right. Wouldn't you just give up and go somewhere else?
Right. Just build somewhere where there's not lava.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's just funny just because it's so different looking than what you saw beforehand,
right.
Which is ironically later in the timeline, even though you saw it before.
Right. Right. So I thought that was really interesting. There's no way of fully justifying the two maps, although they're close. That you can say that one was inspired by the other, but for the most part there's rivers in the right places. The lakes are a bit different, the roads are a bit different, cities are a little bit off from each other, but for the most part it's roughly the same.
Yeah, and I mean, again, when you have the whole narrative of like, oh well, you know, it's there's mistakes in cartography and stuff like that, that's fine. Like that's a neat little way of them kind of squishing that information in there. And again, this is a fictional world done by different teams over different eras, literally in real life, in different games for different things. So it's just interesting to see that they keep, I always feel that Elder Scrolls tends to try to keep the flavor of something, but the fine details, sometimes they do kind of smear them a little bit to make them fit where they need to.
Right. And it makes sense. The games are different. Like, this is a PvP zone in ESO.
Yes,
this was an entire explorable RPG gigantic map in Oblivion.
Absolutely.
So the two are very different. Now, normally on these episodes, we'll go over some of like the fauna and the flora. This is basically Europe.
Yeah,
this is central
Europe, everybody.
We're back in Europe. There's typical animals, typical kinds of trees. At least during the periods that we see, it seems to be a temperate forest kind of area with some grasslands and some
minotaurs
mountains.
Minotaurs tend to be a little more common in the area.
That's true. There's like, some minotaurs.
I mean, that's about as extreme as I can think off the top of
some
my head.
Imps. It's like that. Sometimes there's imps flying around.
Yeah, and I mean, there's definitely the usual fare of weird that happens in the series. But like, honestly, minotaurs being super common tends to be the most strange, I guess. The rest of it really has a very medieval Europe / the Daggerfall region with High Rock and stuff, like very similar type of feel to it.
Yeah. A little bit more Roman in the architecture.
Because yes, the actual Imperials as a race are very Roman inspired. So the Imperial city itself has that feel to it a lot of times when they get into it, when the Imperials are introduced as a literal race.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's the Aeliad ruins that you find everywhere.
Sure.
And a lot of underground stuff, which
whole bunch of Aeliad ruins
ties,
around that area.
Yeah. It ties back to the, you know, the revolution that happened in the first era from the Aeliads, who ruled most of the Mirithic era or however long that was, because that's not particularly clear. So that's the region. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to go thank our patrons, and then we will be back to talk about some of the individual keeps that you can find in ESO and if they actually have a correlative in the Oblivion map, and some of the reason why a lot of people didn't think that this was going to be a temperate forest type zone when Oblivion came out. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance, ready in 30 seconds. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. This is where we get to thank our patrons, including our newest patrons, Sergey P, welcome to the Patreon. Brett J, Enthrall, welcome. Three new patrons, welcome aboard. And thank you to all of our patrons. Hello.
Hello.
Our Daedric tier patrons get shout outs every week. Jacob K, Kira C, and Noodle Al Dente. And thank you to all 125 of our current patrons. We couldn't do this without you. We really do appreciate it. And thank you for being here. If you are interested in checking out what you can get for helping to support this show. So if we've done anything to help you get through your work days and your commutes and who knows what else, then go to Patreon.
Weird entertainment.
Right. Then go to patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. It's easy to find. And there's always links in the show notes and all of that. So the t-shirts and ad free episodes and joining us on patron chats and all of those kinds of things. And speaking of patron chats, this month only has it has 31 days, but it only has 4 weeks on Thursdays, which means that our patron chat for this show is coming up in just a week on the 25th. So
what? I said, ta-da. Oh, we should probably figure out our topic.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. So yeah, chime in on the Discord
topic for that.
Let us know what you would like to talk about and we'll figure it out. And we have some new reviews that came in. So if you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it out on a future episode of the show. This one comes from Iced Tea Lemonade.
I love iced tea lemonade.
Do you? I'm not big into iced tea.
Oh, lemonade's no, I'm a big fan. Big fan. Half and half, Arnold Palmer type stuff. Yep, big fan.
Not a tea drinker. But anyway.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm on board with this already.
So they are from the United States and they write, amazing. Been listening to this podcast since the beginning of the year now, and I'm absolutely loving it. You guys are great.
Aw.
Thanks. And then this one comes from Dead Storm Pirate. From the United States, who writes, my go-to podcast channel. I love this podcast. Been into the Elder Crooks. Is that a different show? I'm not familiar with it. It might be a typo. Since Morrowind, and the lore has always gripped me, and your podcast covers everything I want to know about the amazing world. Everyone associated with the Robots Radio Group makes the best podcasts that make my days at work go by quickly. So thank you so much, Dead Storm Pirate. I hope you're not too dead.
If it's Elder Crooks, does that mean he's like maybe they secretly are a big fan of the Thieves Guild and it's just like a subtle nod to that?
Yeah. Yeah. We should do a side podcast that's only about being sneaky in these games. So, all right.
Oh, so like everybody who's a sneaky archer from Skyrim. Great. 98% of the community's on board.
Yep. Yep. It'll be most of our listeners will also listen to that show. It's automatic success.
Yeah, there you go. Guaranteed.
So, guaranteed. All right. Thank you, everybody, for taking the time to help support the show in all the different ways that you do. We really do appreciate it. All right. Let's get on with the rest of the show.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
My dog is barking at me. You don't need anything. You're fine. All right. So here, let's get into this. There is an article that I discovered from Weebly.com, which is about the different keeps that you find in ESO and how they relate to locations in Oblivion. Oh, spoilers. Most of them don't. But here, we're going to give a quick rundown to find out.
The starter spoiler.
Most of them don't. But we're going to go through each of them real quick and just see which ones might or what they might be near, according to this article. So we have Arius Keep, which is a keep for the Ebonheart Pact, right? So the top right side of the map does not show any remains in the area of Oblivion. The only possible link is Lake Arius, which is located north of Chaidenhall, which tracks for the location.
Sure.
Then we have the Blue Road Keep. Again, Blue Road Keep is non-existent in the time of Oblivion. The road leading from the Imperial City to Chaidenhall is called the Blue Road, and that is the only reference to the keep. So,
sure.
Similarities there. Drakelow Keep. This keep is located on the western side of the Reed River in ESO. It is the most southern home keep of the Ebonheart Pact. In Oblivion, the remains of the keep are not to be found. Instead, we find a settlement of Drakelow, so similar name, but no keep. It is a tiny settlement only containing one house and only one inhabitant called Melisande. That reminds me of the red lady from the Song of Ice and Fire.
Oh,
Melisandre.
Okay.
Melisandre?
I was thinking, okay. Yeah. Melisandre. I was thinking Missande, the freed. She was like the linguist. Same thing from Game of Thrones.
From Game of Thrones. They have similar names, I guess, huh?
They behead her and throw her off a wall.
Right, yeah.
Spoilers for the show, I guess.
Yeah, but I have to wonder.
That
like,
was after everybody.
Maybe Missandei, Danny's assistant. Yeah, I wonder if this name is just a coincidence or if the people working on Oblivion were into those books because some of the early books are pretty old.
They do definitely have a very similar feel.
Yeah, yeah. Then we have King's Crest Keep, located east of the Temple of the Ancestor Moths. King's Crest Keep is the most northern home keep of the Ebonheart Pact. Remains of this keep are not found in the Oblivion map. It's all gone still. Not there. Sejanus Outpost. Yeah. An outpost in ESO, but a medium-sized fort in Oblivion. So this one is there. Located south from Blue Road Keep, it seems to have moved locations for gameplay purposes. So similar thing, just slightly different. But we also mentioned that the cities are in slightly different locations too. So
right, kind of so it seems on brand.
On brand. The remains found in Oblivion are located far more to the east than in the online version. And then there's Fort Ash, a fort in both versions of Cyrodiil. However, the location of Fort Ash in the online version seems to be at nearly, if not exactly, the same location of Fort Nicol in the Oblivion version, which obviously was done for gameplay purposes. Why not keep the same name of Fort Nicol and just leave it Fort Nicol?
I don't know.
Right? Weird. Yeah. Fort Aylswell, once a magnificent keep in the Alliance War, only a small town or village in the Oblivion game. The town or village consists of only two houses. This wasn't always the case. Aylswell once was a large village, but all villagers were evicted on pain of death by Grand Warlord Dorton of the Daggerfall Covenant. There are no remains of the fort to be found in Oblivion. Then we have Fort Dragonclaw, the most northern fortification in the Elder Scrolls Online, only a rock in Oblivion. At this location, the road looks like a dead end. However, a road leads to the east, eventually leading you to the Serpent's Trail and Pale Pass. It ends at Fort Pale Pass, the entryway into Skyrim, which we visit in the Elder Scrolls Skyrim. So that's where the maps match up, right? So pretty cool. And then there's Fort Glademist, which was abandoned in the Alliance War. Nothing remains of the fort, and the only references one can find in the Oblivion game is the fact that it is located in the Glademist Fields area, thus the name, right, in which Glademist Cave is located, a cave network used by the Blackwood Company. Then we have Fort Warden. No remains is going to be found in Oblivion.
Yeah, I was going to say, you noticing a trend so far, everybody?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, though, that some of them are, and some of them you can draw connections to the names.
And we've got maybe one weird one coming up later on.
To find the name of the area. Yeah, right. This was probably abandoned after the Alliance War. Neglection has, and it has fallen into ruin. Fallen. So basically right. Disappeared. Also, after about 1,000 years, you could have ground and sand, I think, pile up. So if the foundations of the fort are still there, they may just be underground.
Okay, so like, I guess before we continue with this for a minute here, it's something that I just feel might be prudent to mention at this point is the fact that so much time has passed and these places are abandoned once the Three Banners War ends and Tiber Septim comes into like wreck face, that's fine for the most part. Like, I feel like that logically, honestly, makes sense because once the war is over, why would you upkeep a lot of these places that were clearly designed by the different alliances? But the only reason that it then becomes peculiar is the fact that there are so many other ruins which are older that remain
that
in
still exist.
Games.
Right,
so
right. That's just, true. That's true.
That's really the only thing that I feel that makes this more awkward is because so many abandoned forts don't crumble into dust and there's just no remains of them over time. Whereas these, it's like, okay, well, we're done. We don't need these anymore. That totally makes sense because over, you know, the course of several hundred years, going into almost 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's not going to be there. Like,
so here's a theory.
It's highly likely.
Here's a theory. Yeah. All right. And Gwen the Bard also notes, what war destroys things, stuff erodes over time. Most of the time, the remnants of fortresses after wars, and if you study history, the remnants of the fortresses are still there. So even so, in order to attack a fortress, you need to only breach it in one location. You don't have to tear all the walls down.
Sure.
That's a way harder endeavor.
Salt it.
Right. That's a way harder endeavor. And even once you capture the place, you don't want to raise it because it becomes a fortress that you can use, that your enemy can no longer use. So it's good to keep it around. But what if after the Three Banners War, there was a significant rebuilding campaign and they used a lot of the materials from these forts, which happens in ancient cities all over the world, and they repurpose, like this happened to the pyramids. The ancient stones on the outside of the pyramids were actually got quarried in many cases and reused in the city that they were building.
Sure, that actually makes
building.
Sense, especially like I actually like that like potential little fill in just because you have the reign of Tiber Septim right on the horizon.
Right.
So it's like,
what if he didn't?
Okay, well, once he takes over,
two things.
He's obviously going to need some stuff to repair things.
So, two things. Why set up extra forts that your enemy can use against you once they invade your land?
Literally the Imperial City.
Right. Especially once you have, two things, vast numbers and the Numidium.
Like, yeah, exactly.
They invade your main area of Cyrodiil and you throw the Numidium at them and they all just evaporate and they're gone. So you don't need fortresses anymore because that would make it harder for you to get rid of them. So why not reclaim all of the stones used and build houses and other kinds of things? Walls for the main city, any of that stuff, right? So...
Right.
That could be part of it. But anyway, here, let's keep moving. Let us know your theories. Maybe there's some good theories out there, because obviously
actually, I've never really heard the repurposing of supplies thing, but I actually like that quite a bit.
Yeah. There are some ancient cities. If you study the Middle East, there are some ancient cities that just don't exist at all anymore. And there are plenty that the foundations are still there. You can see them near modern day cities or out in the middle of the deserts or wherever. But there are some that just don't exist anymore. There are almost no traces of them because so much of the material from this original city actually got repurposed. It's one of those weird things where, like, sometimes that happens. So anyway, let's move on. Bleaker's Outpost. This outpost is located between Chalmen Keep or Chalmen Keep and Fort.
Yeah, Chalmen.
Farts Aleswell.
Perfect.
The village of Bleaker's Way was first settled by Ulf the Bleaker. In the times of the Alliance War, the villagers were ordered to leave the village. Those who refused would be punished with death. During the war, giants occupied the village. In Oblivion, the village was reclaimed by men. There are no remains of Bleaker's Outpost in Oblivion. Wow. Then we have Castle Brindle. The only remains of Castle Brindle in Oblivion is Brindle Home, which is a village located between Coral and Skingrad. The location of Castle Brindle relative to Brindle Home seems to be far more south, probably for gameplay purposes. The castle seems to be located near the Gold Road, which connects Skingrad to the Red Ring Road around the Imperial City. My dog's barking again. Castle Bloodmane. There are no remains of Castle Bloodmane in Oblivion. The only reference that can be found is Bloodmane Cave, which also is a delve in ESO. So that's kind of interesting.
Yep.
Three more. Castle Fairgill is a key location of the Aldmeri Dominion. The castle cannot be found in Oblivion. Instead, we find Fairgill Inn, located west of the Green Road, which leads to the Imperial City, from the Imperial City to Breville. No remains of the castle can be found, which was located on the east side of the Green Road. So there's that. Then there's Castle Robeck, which is located perfectly on the map. However, in Oblivion, the castle is located near the White Rose River. This river could have formed after the era of the Alliance War takes place, because nothing on this river can be found in the online versions. There are some bridges to be found that cross dried up riverbanks, which could be the White Rose River. Maybe it
that
was...
That one I find kind of interesting. Arid. It's kind of neat.
This one is really cool because the castle's still there, but the river's gone.
Right. But there's remnants of what could be a river if water started flowing in that area again.
Right. Yes.
That's pretty cool. So I like that one.
Very cool. Very cool. And then the last one
is ridiculous.
Nickel Outpost, an outpost located south of Fort Ashe and northwest of Castle Robeck. In Oblivion, we find the remains of this outpost in the form of a small fort. The location of Nickel is the most noteworthy. In Oblivion, it is located next to the bridge leading into the Imperial City, west of the village of Way. In the online version, the outpost is located far more south near Fort Virtue on the Oblivion map. So
it's kind of funny that place just sort of got repurposed.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, we don't want Nickel there. We need Nickel here. And then we need this, you know, and we need another one there. So we're going to make this fort instead, or, you know, this keep here. So it's just kind of funny that that one exists, but they had to kind of shuffle the deck a little with that one.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm pulling up the map again just for you all to get a sense of this, just a sense of all these locations. It would take forever for us to zoom in on each of them. But for example, Arya's Keep, which was the first one we mentioned, is right here. And yet if you replace it with the other map, there's nothing there. There's, like, you can see it underneath it. It's transparent, but there's not even a road that goes by that. Like, it's, and the road's here above it, north of it. Also nothing really on the map. So
yeah,
the two locations are distinctly different. And
right. Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah. Maybe you can justify it in some way, or you can just say, very different games that were
for sure
just designing their worlds in very different ways. But the things that are similar are the landscape is similar. It's not perfect. It's not like the hills are all in the same locations. But the fact that there are some forests, there are some hills, there are some mountains on certain edges of the map, there's certain rivers that are in roughly the right locations, there's all of that. But Lotus, this wasn't always to be expected.
No. And the last thing we really kind of need to talk about, the Numidium in the room, if you will, is this weird situation where originally Cyrodiil, prior to the Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion, was actually referenced as being a jungle.
Right. Right. Which, everyone expected the center of the continent to be jungle.
Right.
Jungles happen in areas, at least on our planet, that are closer to the equator than temperate forests.
Right.
But we didn't get a jungle.
We did not get a jungle. Which, again, there has been all sorts of debate on this. You know, is it solely a gameplay thing where it was just like, well, jungles are too hard to make, so as a side effect, did the team decide, like, for Elder Scrolls 4, well, okay, what if we just do a temperate forest because it's more manageable,
some grasslands, some trees. They had the new speed tree technology, which I believe was used in Oblivion at the time.
I believe it was. Yeah. There was also the situation of, like, processing all the grass was too, like, strenuous for the 360. So it would, like, render the grass farther out. And it was something from what I remember hearing, they had to, like, reposition where the grass texture was on the disc so it would spin at a different speed so that it wouldn't, like, overheat. So, like, there's clearly technical limitations because, as was, there was, you know, the 360 was new at the time when this game came out.
They were already pushing the boundaries of it.
Yes.
And this game was a beautiful game when it came out.
It really was. And to be fair, it's still, to a degree, outside the potato heads, really is.
Just don't look at the people. Look at the trees.
Don't really
and
look
the mountains.
Too much at people.
That part's still pretty.
Yeah, but the landscape is gorgeous. And some of the design of stuff is just really, really cool. But the idea of it being a jungle, as referenced by it by in-game books earlier in the series, then had to become, well, okay, why? And there was this theory that a lot of people accepted for quite a while, that when Tiber Septim took over, he reshaped the lands because he had gained that type of power. He was becoming a divine. All of this power literally let him reshape the physical landscape to be what he wanted.
Right, which is, you could also justify as having control of the tower, the towers having control over the land around them.
Correct.
And so you can make that justification as well.
So that was, like, the prevailing thing for quite a while, if I remember. And actually, as Rob mentions in chat as well, then Elder Scrolls Online came along, so Tiber Septim isn't here yet. And it's totally a temperate forest. It's not a jungle.
It's not a jungle. Somehow it never was a jungle, maybe?
So then it becomes, okay, well, that clearly wasn't the case.
Right.
But since it was described from in-game, and I wish I had an exact reference for this, but I do believe that, from what was mentioned through, like, actual Elder Scrolls Online, it's like implied or said by the team that it's a translation error. They didn't mean jungle, like, because it's still forest, but it's not meant to be jungle so much as, like, foresty, which it is. Which is, that's many will call that retconning or doing whatever. And that's fine. Like, again, it's not a real place. So they have to take some degree of liberties. But one thing that I actually just thought was, I don't know, I feel like this was a discussion I was just involved with maybe on forums or something a long time ago. But it's something that I thought was just an interesting theory is... you know about the Mandela effect, where people mm-hmm. think something, but it's not actually the case. And it's almost like a groupthink hive mind thing where everybody remembers this thing wrong.
Yeah,
I almost kind of wonder, like, they could totally have something like that. And still it's in lore or whatever. But it's like, was it just like a thing where everybody's like, yeah, it was a jungle.
Right.
Wasn't it?
Well, everyone said it was, so it was, right? That's all we remember.
I heard it was so many times that... I just thought it was a jungle. It's just like when I originally had heard that theory and like had talked about it, I was like, that's actually kind of funny to think about, because like there's a lot of situations where honestly that effect is kind of eerie in real life mm-hmm. and happens more than you would think. with Berenstein bears instead of Berenstein right. bears and stuff
right.
like that.
Right.
So it's like it's. Yes, it's weird. Yes, it's clearly like it's a writing thing that they just kind of like, for whatever maybe technical reasons, they changed it. But it's just kind of funny that it's just like, yeah, it changed from what it was originally described as, but you never really saw it enough to actually ever prove that it was what they were saying it was.
Right, right. So it's kind of like an arena. The Tamriel was called the Arena.
The Arena.
Right.
And that is like
maybe that was figurative. Okay. So what if this was figurative right. also? Like that area is the jungle.
Right.
Because there's lots of animals fighting over it.
It's uncivilized.
You know, it's uncivilized.
It's whatever the case.
Right.
So it's one of those situations where was it meant as more of a figurative statement?
Probably not. But
my assumption, no, they wrote it to be a jungle.
Right,
and then when
right.
it came to programming time, it was like, oh, God, we need to make this. And this is way more complicated.
Yeah, probably.
But because the series itself is such a gray, nebulous thing already.
Maybe a gray
the
maybe.
Fact that it totally doesn't sync up fits really well with everything else in this series.
Yeah. 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 So it's not a jungle. We don't have scenes of it being a jungle. We have scenes of it not being a jungle before Tiber Septim. So
yeah.
He clearly didn't make it not a jungle because there already
right.
wasn't one. But we don't know. And I don't know that we ever will know. I think the justification now is this is how it is. And any of the lore that described it otherwise is just not it's accurate. So
not right.
All right.
It's like, right.
That's
because
fine. That's fine. Imagine
sure.
inheriting a 25 or 30 year old series of games that were written by other people decades ago.
Right.
Or a book. And now you have to write the sequel to the book. This happens in all sorts of
yeah.
stuff all the time, where people are doing TV shows based off of series of things. And sure, you could even study all of it. Maybe you are well versed in all of the lore and all of that, but you still have a goal in mind. You have to make a new game. You have to make a new story. You have to make something, and
sure,
it needs
and
to be compelling
the
in
exact
your own
direction
way.
They were planning to go with stuff you haven't seen yet.
Right. Right. And sometimes there's just these offhanded lines. Sometimes the lines aren't even that important by these like minor characters.
There's a lot of those in Elder Scrolls.
Yeah. Little minor characters who just like are just saying a thing here, saying a thing there. And you can't keep it all straight. There's just no way to do
right.
it.
So. But yeah, if anybody actually, because I kind of like I don't know, this is one of the few topics I really like hearing different theories on. If anybody listening has any weird theories on why it's not actually a jungle that we didn't mention already, definitely like float them out there to us, because I'm always amused by some of these, because I've seen some very entertaining ones, and like the prevailing one of Tiber Septim just changed it really lasted a long time.
Yeah.
Until it was like, yeah, so it was like, nah, we're all done with that whole thing, because here it is again, and it's super temperate. So like, that's just it. It's like that one got debunked eventually, but some of the other ones are still floating around. And it's like, do you have your own in lore reason why it exists, or was it just technical reasons?
Yeah, yeah. So who knows, but let us know your thoughts. Join us on our Discord, the Robots Radio Discord, or heck, join us for the patron chat. Let us know if you want to debate this on the patron chat. But we'll come up with something for next week. Thank you for being here, everybody. I hope you've enjoyed this tour of Tamriel. We're going to dig into some other things in the future episodes, so make sure you come back for those. Lotus, you have anything else going on you want to share?
No, just normal Tales of Tamriel that we've been recording over there, covering the events currently in game. And actually, I guess from one thing that we did related to the Lorecasters as well, we got the PlayStation NA Guild for the Lorecasters kind of up and running again. It really, like, it's just been some scheduling stuff that's been tricky, and I'm trying to lend a hand type of deal. So if that's something you're interested in, it is now up and running. It is fully functional. We already have enough people in it that we have the guild bank. So if you're new to the game or just looking for a social guild, we're not doing like progression stuff or anything fancy like that. I simply don't have the time. And as people, you know, if that becomes something that people want to run, that's totally great.
Totally cool.
Whatever.
If the community decides on any platform, whether it's PlayStation or Xbox or PC, that you all want to get together and do a thing, we're cool with
perfect.
It.
Perfect.
Like, go do it. As long as it's not like griefing other people or something like that.
As long as you're still being nice to each other, right, that's right. Fine. But what do you call it? But myself, as well as several of my friends, we're obviously there to help. The guild bank is open. So if you are new, I'm kind of running this the way that I ran my old helper guild, which I closed up shop to try to help this, as it just logically made more sense. But yeah, the guild bank is open. So if you're new to the game or just trying the game out and you play on PlayStation NA, hit us up for an invite. You are welcome to anything in the guild bank. It's largely provided by me and a couple of my friends. The supplies are there just to help people get started.
Yeah, it helps if you are a character who already has a lot of stuff when you get extra recipes or whatever.
Correct.
You know, I don't want this treasure map. You just dump it in the guild bank, and then new people check out the guild bank because maybe there'll be some treasures in there that you don't have to earn on your
Gwen, consider yourself invited right after the show.
There you go. Yeah, so join us on the Discord. Go to the Robots Radio Discord. There is a channel that you will find that is says apply to guild, and you just got to fill out a little form, let us know a little bit about you, what platform you're on, and all of that, and then within a few days,
nice and easy, make sure you're not a douchebag. Like,
yep, within a few days,
do not. I will continue the trend of we will not have tolerance for that. This is supposed to be a fun social thing, and hopefully sooner rather than later, I'm actually going to build us a guild hall because I have a whole bunch of extra supplies. So we're going to test out that. We'll see how long that actually takes.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, cool stuff. Go check out Tales of Tamriel. You can find links to my other podcasts and Lotus's other podcast on robotsradio.net, and come hang out with us during the live shows. Thank you for being here, everybody. We will see you again next week with our patrons. So have an awesome week. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for joining us. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach me on Twitter at robots_radio or Lotus of Doom at Lotus of Doom. Also, you can join us on the Robots Radio Discord channel. You can easily just search Robots Radio Discord on Google or check the description underneath the podcast. Also, this podcast is recorded live every week on Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on the Robots Radio channels on Twitch, YouTube, and on Facebook. So just search Robots Radio on any of those platforms. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you while we record the show, or before or after. Either way, just come hang out with us. And if you're looking for more information about my shows and the shows on the Robots Radio Network, go to robotsradio.net for all the information about all the shows on the network, including the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where I help both new and existing podcasters to grow their shows, build their audiences, and create the best podcast they possibly can. All of that at robotsradio.net. We'll see you next time.